welcome to Panel to the People. Panel to the People is an improvised radio show. Everything about this show comes from the audience suggestions, including the name of the show itself. So, for example, from the audience, I would like a noun smaller than a watermelon, please.
Hamster.
A spade.
A spade. We always have animals, so we're going to go with a spade. And I'd also like another noun larger than an electric guitar.
A car.
And could I have a verb which could possibly link these two things together?
Driving.
I like that. Okay, so the name of the show is My Spade is Driving My Car. So, hello and welcome to My Spade is Driving My Car! People are remarkably happy about this prospect. We have four wonderful improvised panellists here today who are going to make you laugh and play some games. We have CJ Donnelly. We have Michael Contario.
Yay!
We have Tom Ellis.
Yay!
And we have Chris Smoten.
Yay!
And we're going to start by playing a game called Song Lyrics. In this game, I give a lyric from a famous or not so famous song, and the panellists just suggest what might come next. So, I went past your window, you didn't look up.
I went past your window, but you didn't look up. I hate service at Santander.
If you make it into heaven, my son...
Leave the door open.
If you make it into heaven, my son will play one-on-one basketball with you. It's all part of the service here at Judeo-Christian Afterlife. Call now.
Excuse me, what is the secret to your soul?
It's mainly about vocal harmony.
Oh.
And that was song lyrics. We're going to play a game called Sound Effects now, in which CJ and Michael will make sound effects to help illustrate the finer points of the story that Tom and Chris are going to tell. From the audience, please, I'd like a non-geographic location.
The moon?
Sure. Mm. I like the moon. It's kind of geographic. But then it's not, you know? It would be on an atlas.
That is a quasi-geographic location, which I shall accept.
Undiscovered country.
The undiscovered country of the moon. But let's take a spade and a car on the moon.
Astronaut Steve had been marooned on the moon for months.
The only thing that was there to keep him company was his pet moon dog, Boris.
Steve and Boris would go on picnic holidays in the lunar countryside.
They were determined not to let any of their picnics be ruined by bee attacks.
Steve's pastime when not picnicking was lunar archaeology. He liked to dig for treasure on the moon, which he frequently found.
Hi ho, hi ho, it's off to work I go.
Ooh!
Boris's moondog would frequently help him, ferreting into nooks and crannies to pull out nuggets of treasure.
Get out my trousers.
Steve's trouser integrity was critical as he was on the moon.
Trouser integrity breached.
Replenishing his oxygen supply from a spare bottle and bashing Boris about the head with a space newspaper. Quite a tough space newspaper. He resumed his digging and found something highly unusual.
It was an ancient moon car.
That's right, it was an ancient moon car which welled to the surface. For he had struck not only car, but oil on the moon. The geyser of oil sprayed high into the atmosphere, and in fact, all the way into lunar orbit.
Boris, old boy, said Steve, this could be our ticket out of here. If we can only harness the power of this moon car and associated oil, we can blast back to Earth and home.
Her?
Boris didn't understand that complicated concept, but he complied to get in the lunar mobile. Steve took the driver's seat and drove with haste at the gushing oil geyser.
He got it up to fourth gear and into the gushing oil geyser where he was blasted out of the lunar gravity well.
Boris's tail was trapped in the door. Steve rectified that situation.
Clunk, clunk.
Replenishing his oxygen supplies once more from another spare bottle. He carried many of these on his belt due to multiple stupid incidents involving Boris. Heading towards an Earth injection orbit, Steve gave pause to consider the nature of his craft.
He put on the handbrake just to make sure there wasn't any rolling back towards the moon.
Steve thought to himself, just how heat-shielded is a Ford Mondeo exactly?
The Morse code coming across the airwave said, it's very heat-shielded, you'll be fine.
Steve and Boris coursed a violent entry into Earth's atmosphere, heading towards Devon.
They touched down in a field just outside Torquay, making a soft landing on a helpful cow that just happened to be passing by.
And moo.
The end. We're going to play a game called Shopping Channel. In this, both pairs of Chris and Tom and Michael and TJ are going to try and sell you some products in the style of an incredible shopping channel on TV. From the audience, I'd like a noun, please.
Drum.
A drum. And a property that this drum might have, which is very unusual.
It dissolves in water.
It dissolves in water. Tom and Chris, I'd like you to sell that. And Michael and TJ, could I have a second noun, please?
Shoe.
A shoe. And something that's unusual about the shoe, other than that there's only one of it.
Rock.
Pardon?
It's out of rock.
A shoe made out of rock that can fly. Okay. We'll start with Tom and Chris. Take it away.
Hello, and welcome to the Curmudgeon Network.
Chris, being the old curmudgeon that you are, you must be having difficulty getting enough drum in your diet.
You're absolutely right, Tom. I attempted to eat a snare yesterday, and it was painful to say the least.
Do you know, the latest research by scientists says that curmudgeons old as us are having trouble getting even as much as 50% of the required recommended daily allowance of drum.
By God's own beard.
It's difficult for us old curmudgeons to take a knife and fork and really tuck into a drum.
It certainly is, if only there was some way to render a drum more consumable. But alas, hope is lost on that front.
But don't worry, I'm not talking about powdered drum. I'm not talking about any kind of, sort of pretend the drum's not solid by grinding up into fine particles. I'm talking about real drum that dissolves in water.
An honest-to-good drum solution.
An honest-to-good drum solution. You put it in your bath. You come back in 20 minutes and the drum's gone. That's right, it's gone into solution in your bath. And there's only one thing you need to do now. Isn't that right, Chris?
That's right. Drink your bath water. Any self-respecting curmudgeon. Who would waste the water put into a bath under ordinary circumstances?
In fact,
I certainly wouldn't. Redox has significant nutritional value. Drums do, too.
Who in fact, would waste time when you could be washing yourself at the same time as getting your 100% RDA of drum?
That is right. One drum.
One drum,
that
one bath, one clean body.
You know this.
One happy curmudgeon.
You know, drums that dissolve in water have extra utility as well. For example, I bet as a curmudgeon, you hate hippies.
Oh, that's right, I can't stand hippies.
And like most curmudgeons, you'll be one of the following. A firefighter. A hairdresser who has one of those squirty water things.
Yes, I am, both of them.
Or anybody else equipped with a bucket of water in their occupational pursuits. Well, hippie drum circles need no longer concern you. for a deluge from your hosepipe slash squirty thing slash bucket of water incidentally carried around.
That's right. Not only are we selling drums that dissolve in water, we're selling water that dissolves all drums.
Exactly. Buy the pair and get 100% off the purchase price.
That's right. It becomes absolutely free if you buy the pair.
I'm quite bored of this. I'm going to see what's on the other channel. Click.
Hello, and welcome to the music channel.
Now, I am thinking that music has become too technological.
I agree. It needs to get back to its roots where people just use played drums and electric guitars.
Right. So I've got a time machine here. But I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, how would I disguise myself? When you go back in time, you can't go back in ordinary, regular workday clothes. Our silver jumpsuits would stick out like a sore thumb in ancient Greece.
Indeed they would. They would think we were some sort of Olympians or something.
Exactly, and we can't be having that. So you know what we need? We need to impersonate their religious icons. But not in a technological way. We need to take the most untechnological substance we can think of and really cast it into some kind of Greek god mold.
I see what you're saying. To fit in with their religion, we should be looking to fit into their religion using stuff from the past rather than our snazzy future threats.
Right. Stuff with an old world look that still really sucks on your feet in that disconcerting way that Mother used to do.
Carry on.
Well, have a look at this. In fact, put your hand in there.
This doesn't seem the right shape. Oh, wait, now it does.
The amazing internal Soccer-matic technology forms itself to your hands or feet. But on the outside, it looks just like rock.
But surely if I was clomping around wearing those, I'd look really stupid.
Of course, Greek gods don't clomp around anywhere. Especially not Greek gods of music like we're selling to.
So, what will you do to make this more godlike?
Well, Greek gods, specifically Greek gods of music, fly.
So there you have it. Flying rock shoes. Well, shoe, you have to buy them individually.
As with our time machine halves.
Call now.
We're going to play a game now called Blind Charades. In this game, Michael is going to perform a mime which CJ will describe. Tom and Chris will not be able to see the mime and will thus have to guess the contents of the charades from the mime performed and the description therefore given. From the audience, I'd like a book, film, or other thing that could appear in charades.
The Three Musketeers.
Sounds good. Let's get them back. You can come back now! We have a charade for you, so CJ and Michael, take it away.
He has raised his bright arm and is making the sign of a bunny rabbit that is also quite happy. a bunny rabbit that's giving approval.
A nodding bunny rabbit?
It's completely motionless. Now he's telling you to go away in the style of Margaret Thatcher whilst still signalling approval.
Does that mean he's sticking his middle finger up?
I don't think Thatcher is as cool as you think she is.
He is tonguing his teeth introspectively, but that is unrelated to the show. He is holding up several digits of his right hand.
Is he signalling how many words there are on the thing he's trying to
charade? I couldn't possibly comment.
Okay, several words.
I honestly don't know how
several
many words from
he's
your
He's nodding at several words.
Several words.
A bunny habit, but it's also... So the bunny rabbit is thus, but
it's a bunny rabbit whose name is several words long.
But there's some approval going on here. That's not approval on its own. That's just
he's signalling approval by clenching his fist, except also possibly pretending to stopper a bottle that is directly above his fist.
A bottle?
A bottle.
A bottle?
Is he like doing one potato, two potatoes?
Yes, like that, but using one digit.
It's a bunny rabbit that's also a potato. There's got seven words. Is it a Maris Piper? Is it Maris Piper?
He is pointing at three fingers on his right hand.
So the third word.
I've realised the problem with this game.
he has now taken three digits of his left hand and placed them on his left wrist.
Three syllables.
three syllables, but you describe something biologically impossible.
He is rotating between the bottle plugging digit and the indicating digit on with his right hand on his left wrist, as though they are to be taken as a unit.
First and second syllables.
He has raised his right hand to his chin, still with the bottle plugging digit upraised, and he has placed his left hand out with his palm cupped in front of him, his fingers curled around an object about the size and shape of a carrot. He is grinning, staring off into the distance, and then waving his left hand up and his shoulder back.
Is it kind of what a farmer does when he's really pleased with this season's carrot crop?
He looks like a very displeased farmer.
Is he pumping iron?
The rabbit has eaten his carrot crop. And he's looking wistfully out into the distance.
He has taken a small pellet out of his left pocket.
And he's going to use it to shoot the rabbit in revenge.
He's pointing at the back of your head.
He's going to shoot me in revenge. I'm not the rabbit. I didn't do it. It was Flopsy.
He has extended his left hand again, cupping an imaginary carrot, far out with his left arm completely outstretched. And his His right hand very close to his face, with his elbow above his right shoulder.
He's saying, peace, carrot, rabbit,
and
no more.
And he's looking forward into the distance.
Oh, he's going to shoot a shotgun at the rabbit.
Michael is pointing at the back of your head, but also... he's pointing at the back of your head, but also rotating his fingers counterclockwise as though to signal going back several steps. And now forward several steps. Maybe you're in the right area.
He's just playing with me before he blows me away.
He likes the word shotgun, but doesn't think the word shotgun is the correct word.
Assault rifle. Gatling gun. Howitzer. Bow and arrow.
He is miming again the first and second syllable, indicating that it's two syllables.
Shotgun.
Rifle. Musket.
He's pointing at the back of your head.
Oh! Is it Bunny Rabbit and the Three Musketeers?
And of course the problem with this, which CJ illustrated perfectly without me realising, is that it's three words and has a three syllable word and contains the word three. We're going to do a double-headed interview now for the job of a lifetime. From the audience, I'd like a suggestion for a job that there could only be one of. It doesn't have to be a real job.
Captain Nemo.
Who sells the submarine Nautilus. Michael and Chris, please take it away.
Good
day.
What
makes
you
suitable
to
fill
the
shoes
of
the
famous
slain
Captain
Nemo?
My
first
feat
has
astonished
the
crowds
that
line
the
whaling
docks. What?
Why?
And
who?
What?
The
eating
of
a
whale.
Why?
Because
I
could.
And who?
A
small
whale.
Well
done.
Thanks.
Now,
what
would
you
apply
to
the
outside
of
the
Nautilus
to
improve
it?
The
first
thing
I
would
apply
to
the
Nautilus
would
render
it
completely
invisible
to
sonar.
What substance
would
possibly
achieve
such
wonders?
Insulating
foam.
It's
better
than
previously
thought. Although
it's
damp
and
heavy
and
not
really
suitable
for
a
diving
vehicle.
20,000
leagues
is
currently
the
record
for
depth.
How
would
you
beat
that?
by
going
back
1 year and
killing
Captain Nemo.
But
Captain
Nemo
died
under
mysterious
circumstances
one
day
and
in
yes,
it
was
me
with
the
time
traveling
submarine.
Have
you
no
concept
of
timeline
safety?
No,
apparently
not.
Ah,
if
you
insist
on
piloting
this
stealthy
submarine
about
in
enemy
waters,
what
would
you
do
about
the
Russians?
The
Russians
can
not
see
the
submarine
because
it's
covered
in
insulating
foam.
Didn't you listen?
Aren't you listening
to
me?
Captain
Nemo
didn't
listen to
me.
That's why
I killed him.
Terrified
me.
Take the submarine
and
go
away.
Okay.
We're going to play a mystery round now. The mystery round is a special round where the panellists have never practiced the game before, and the game has never been played before because I've just invented it. I will explain the rules of the game such that they can play it, and then we'll give it a go. And if it's successful, maybe it will come back in future shows. This particular mystery round is called The Journeyman, and is not at all ripped off from a popular entrepreneurial business show. I will take the part of the famous House of Lords Lord, Lord Salt, and I will ask the four people about a task that they performed earlier in the day, where they tried to invent a product and sell it to a business. Between them, collaboratively, they failed utterly at this task, and they are going to try and explain away their particular failings by blaming each other for things that went wrong. From the audience, I would like some suggestions. So I would like a product that they were trying to invent. Let's say a kitchen implement.
A potato peeler.
And I would like some unique property that would make a potato peeler more desirable to buy. Something good.
A time-travelling
potato peeler. And I would also like a reason why their whole idea fell apart, why it was no good.
It doesn't actually peel potatoes.
It doesn't peel potatoes. If I had a door behind me, I'd be walking through and staring disapprovingly at you. Assume this part of the narration substitutes that action.
So I went to the company we're pitching to, and all was going fine. They seemed to like the idea, and I opened up the case I had with me just to show them the produce. And Chris told me the future him was going to go to China and manufacture 100,000 of the things and send them back in time into my case, and they weren't there.
Well, let me tell you that, because the company you went to, the people sitting on the other side of the desk were copies of you. I went with you, and there were just 50 of you.
Yeah, and we were all really willing to buy into the product. But Chris didn't send them.
Wait. You tried to sell a product to 50 copies of yourself, and
yeah,
you didn't buy it.
Well, I was completely convinced by my own spiel. Me and the other 49 of me were really completely convinced, but the product wasn't there.
Are you the you that was selling the product, or the you that was buying the product?
Well, it's quite... We often have to try and get our stories straight like this, because none of us can remember our own names and who we are. At home, we had to give each other various names ever since the other 49 got sent back. So it got sent back in time, and we get another one every year from... I don't know who's sending us back, actually, but it's always a nice Christmas to have another one. We get to know him and share stories.
Is there a point to this?
Anyway, it was his fault. It was Chris's fault.
Well, it might or might not be. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you talked to my future self, who I also talked to, who said he was going to do it, but I'm going to have to wait to become him in order to find out why I did or did not.
So this is just a ploy, because if you get fired, you obviously won't bother to do it. So he's trying to manipulate the laws of time not to get fired.
That might be true. Like, if you fire me, then I'll tell you whether or not that's the case.
Well, look here, look. If I'm going to take you on as my journeyman, I'm going to need somebody who can sell things to people. And you couldn't even sell something to yourself. So, for that reason, Tom...
You're fired!
Now, tell me about this document that you produced.
Oh, well, it was. I worked long and hard on the document. I think that I put a lot of effort into it, really highlighted the advantages of a time-travelling potato peeler so that all the potatoes would be pre-peeled. But CJ just turned it all back and just said, no, we're not using that. And
right.
I put a lot of effort into
it. Right,
that.
Because Chris, or future Chris, in China perhaps,
well,
has neglected to put something into the potato peeler that's quite necessary.
Yeah, no, well, look, okay, so I had to kick out the actual blade element in order to fit the time rotor. Like, they're really big. Like, if you look at this potato peeler now, it is roughly the size of a double-decker bus. At the centre of that, you will find the handle of a potato peeler, the blade of which I was forced to remove. It is also very difficult to use it to actually peel potatoes, because you would just have to kind of drive the bus back and forth over some potatoes. Alternatively, go under the bus and then kind of rub the potato on the bottom of the bus. Quite frankly, this is a time machine, not a potato peeling device. But back to the document, I was unable to deliver an actual functioning document because I asked my future self to replenish the paper on my printer. And it turns out what my future self did is ask my past self, who put the front of the reel of paper into the time bus and then fed that into my future printer. So it turns out there was kind of a time Mobius strip going through my printer, and there was just kind of past wisdom belting from my printer, none of which was actually stuff which I'd written. So I don't know where that came from or why I would do that to myself, but I have. And if you fire me, I will tell you why I did that, that horrible temporal acrobatics to my printer. I have reason to believe I'm also shoveling toner from the paper back into the cartridge in the past.
Well, look here. I work in technology, and I'm going to need somebody who understands technology and who can use a printer. If I hire you today, then in the future, when you're working for me, you're going to have your future self working for me. And he couldn't operate a printer. He couldn't even make a potato print.
Exactly. I mean, I honestly look forward to the enlightenment you're about to bring me. Please, for God's sake, say the magic words.
For that reason...
You're fired!
Yes!
Ow! Let me just say that I fully support your potato print business.
My potato print business.
Yes, you just referred to your potato print business.
Yes, you do. We don't talk about my potato print business in this boardroom.
Sorry, no. Salt.
But I was waiting for all the orders to come in. I was waiting there by the telephone. It was going to be a 24-hour telephone helpline, but because
right.
of the time travel, it ended up being
okay.
a constant telephone helpline through all of space and time.
We saved money. We saved so much money. We only had to employ that temp for 1 hour, and she answered calls for all of space and time.
Yeah, suddenly they were all saying that the potato peeler didn't peel potatoes. And we neglected to teach her how to respond to calls of that nature.
I mean, at least we know that because she was getting calls from the future, then we must sell this product to someone. If I hadn't been in charge of the phone, then you wouldn't have that knowledge. I can give you accurate sales predictions.
So why does this potato peeler... whose idea was it to take the peeling aspect out of this potato?
Well, Chris's. He admitted
Chris.
That.
Okay. Who was team leader on this?
I was. I've worked in time travel before.
You've worked in time travel before?
Well, not yet. But I will have worked in time travel before by the end of this task.
So this whole time travel malarkey was your idea?
Well, actually, it was written on the Mobius strip. The Mobius strip of bus printer.
As I've explained, I never wrote any of the words involved there. I have yet to determine who created the Mobius bus printer to begin with.
So we based your entire business plan around a Mobius strip of writing that you just happened to find.
Well,
we found this Mobius strip.
We were brainstorming. We were brainstorming, and suddenly a double-decker bus ran through the wall, and Chris was screaming another version of Chris, and there was just this Mobius like strip of paper with plans for a time machine on with a potato peeler attachment with sales predictions.
Right, I see.
So those were actually sales facts. To you they were sales predictions.
But to you they were sales facts.
Exactly.
Because you were driving the bus.
So says the version of me that delivered the Mobius strip. As I've explained, I've yet to become him.
CJ, why shouldn't I fire you?
Because if you do, then I will never work in time travel in the future before the end of this task, and so all of my experience will make this much more confusing in retrospect.
And I would like to say that you shouldn't fire me, because if you do, I will go back in time and kill your grandfather.
That patently hasn't happened, and I don't like threats in this boardroom. For that reason...
You're fired!
I don't want to cause a time paradox, CJ. You can come work with me.
Thank you, Cecil.
But don't mention the potato print business. Okay, since we've been doing some interrogative questioning, let's have a game of interrogation. CJ is the accused. This means CJ needs to go into a holding cell for a while we figure out what crime she has performed. In interrogation, the other three panellists are going to serve as police officers trying to get CJ to confess to her crimes. However, because she's drunk in a holding cell somewhere, she doesn't remember them. I'd like from the audience an idea of a minor crime that she might have committed.
Broken a pencil.
I like that. Broken a pencil, yep, we'll go with that. Can I have a place where she might have done this?
In a lecture room.
In a lecture theatre. And can we have a accomplice who would have been involved, a famous person?
Darwin.
I like this. Well, if we could get CJ back, I'll take it away.
This is police brutality. Help!
Well, you were pretty brutal when you committed this crime, weren't you?
You mean with the knife on the Colosseum floor?
No. I'll talk to you about that later. No, this was much, much closer. In fact, some might say it was a place that you frequented every Monday to Saturday, but not on Sundays.
Yes, I admit that I committed a crime in the not church. But you don't have any evidence. You don't have any witnesses.
Well, a lot of them were asleep in there. But we do have at least three students who were awake.
Right, but how do you know that I was really there if no one observed me to be there?
Well, three people did, we just said that.
I didn't observe them. Maybe they weren't there.
It wasn't the quantum mechanics lecture.
Right.
It was general relativity, and you know it.
And just such a heinous crime to actually prevent the transfer of knowledge from the lecturer to the student via some sort of plant-based matter.
I'm sorry that my Venus flytrap ate all of the words.
No, these were words in potentia.
It also ate the lecturer.
That happened later.
And it's not illegal. What you did, however, is illegal against the statutes of the university.
I just had a burning passion to commit this crime.
But it wasn't just you, was it? You were egged on by somebody.
No, in fact, also, this crime was directly the result of someone else committing it. In fact, you might say it was a carbon copy.
You mean the aliens from Star Trek that were silicon-based life forms that helped me in my getaway?
No. Frankly, it's your accomplice that began to give away your crime. You'd been very subtle until this point, but quite frankly, when you find a hole the size and shape of a time bus in the wall, then you begin to get a bit suspicious. Now, I know that this being a time phenomenon, you'd claim that you don't know the origin of the particular visitor. But
that's right. Like, this crime was just written down in perfect detail on a Mobius strip of, of criminal memoranda.
That's exactly the problem, isn't it, CJ? Writing down. That's exactly your problem.
Yes, I admit it. I'm a compulsive writer down of things.
And you don't like to see anyone else doing what you love to do?
Nope. I'm the anti-Joseph Heller of modern America. In that Joseph Heller wrote things, and I prevented things from being written.
Exactly.
In lectures.
Exactly.
With a time bus.
Kind of.
What led you to do this?
The lecturer put up a really good graphite. I'm sorry, I drove my time bus with my own future self into a lecture hall and stole all of the lead from the pencils there, preventing people from learning.
Stole? No, you were much more violent than this. You didn't think the pencils should survive.
I snapped their leads.
Hey. Because they were not fit enough to survive.
In an evolution lecture.
Now, I'm sure you'd love to think that your future self was your accomplice, but as this particular person is well documented as having been operating in the 18th century, I think, then you're not going to pass that one off as another one that was done by your own future self. No, no.
Look, I don't know where he is. I can't give you any help in finding Nemo.
Actually, we tracked him down to the 19th century.
Damn.
He's hiding around in the Galapagos Islands. So, are you ready to confess?
Yes, I'm ready to confess. I drove a time bus into a lecture theatre with Charles Darwin to snap everyone's pencil leads.
Very impressive. We're going to play a game called Change Speech. Who would like to give a speech?
All right.
Tom is going to give a speech, and during the speech, at various points, Chris is going to say that he doesn't like the content of the speech, and he's going to say change, and Tom will change the thing that he just said. I would like a group of professionals that Tom might be speaking to.
Jugglers.
And something completely unrelated to juggling that Tom might be speaking about.
Jam.
Okay, Tom, can you give a seminar to a group of jugglers about jam?
Good evening.
It's change.
Good morning.
Change.
Good afternoon.
Change.
Good night to you all, because it is the night that we're in here. And I'm glad to see that jugglers have embraced the future and brought along glow-in-the-dark juggling balls.
So change.
Brought along juggling balls that are on fire, seeing juggling balls that are virtual.
And you don't change.
Juggling balls that are metaphorical. So even when it's dark and you can't see, you can sort of juggle with them metaphorically, in the sense of juggling with difficult abstract concepts. Because I'm all about abstract concepts. I am from the University of Cambridge.
Change.
I'm from the University of Oxford.
Change.
I'm from the University of Life. And I've studied a lot of abstract concepts in my life. And the one that I want to talk to you tonight about is a particular sort of potted fruit-based compote, which is it's a way of preserving fruits for the use in the future.
Change.
For use in the past.
Change.
For use in the present. Because if the fruit's not preserved, how are you going to use it in the present? This is what I'm talking about, abstract concepts. You may think preservation is for taking stuff from the past to the future. But in the middle of the past and the future, there's the present. If you don't think about the present, then, where are you?
Change.
Then where am I?
Change.
Then who am I?
Change.
Then I am who?
Change.
Then who is who?
Change.
I am I. Because I am I in the present. I was he in the past, and I will be he in the future. And jam is what is here. And jam is what we're going to eat after the seminar is over.
Change.
Before the seminar has begun, we
change.
All ate. During the seminar, we're all eating jam. Juggling abstract concepts in our mind and eating jam with a spoon. Eating jam with a fork.
Change.
Eating jam with a knife.
Change.
Eating jam with our fingers.
Change.
Eating jam with our tongues.
Change.
Just drinking it as though it was a drink. Because it's quite runny jam. It hasn't really gelled yet. Can't quite be called jam. It's basically fruit juice. It's not marmalade, it's orange juice. And this is cranberry juice. And they exist in the present. One of them was from the past and one of them was from the future. You mix them together and in the middle there's some sort of jam. But it's not a jam, it's kind of liquid. And that's what we're drinking right now. I'm from the University of Life, and I want you to all to understand that metaphorical concepts can be very useful in your practical juggling from day to day. So I hope you'll take that away with you this evening.
We're running out of time, so there's just time for a quick fire round where I ask questions to each of the panellists that were provided before the show by the audience. So, Chris, should politicians be forced to wear health warnings like cigarettes?
Yes, but only if they cover like their entire surface of their body and they can't wear clothes.
Michael, do you know a good recipe for pie?
3.14159.
CJ, is anything more annoying than polyp tyrene squeak?
The previous joke.
Chris, how much do you weigh?
That really depends what planet I'm on at the time. And in no case is it your business.
Okay. Michael, did you ever see a cat so clever?
No, my cat's just sewed really badly.
Chris, what on earth is quasi-resonant excitation?
It's not broadcastable after 9 p.m.
After 9 p.m.
It's only broadcastable before the watershed. It's kind of anti-porn.
Michael, what units do you think should be abolished forever?
Seconds, because no one actually uses them. People just use minutes. Apart from the Olympics, I've just realised. I'm banning the Olympics.
And Usain Bolt has once again finished in 0 minutes. I am furious with this timing system.
Yeah, ban seconds, it'll be hilarious.
CJ, what's the best way to get banned from radio?
I think it's to a and then seconds are. A 4PS person family in and that hands.
Enough!
The Aristocrats.
That was Panels of the People. It was recorded in Churchill Music Centre. The host was David Birch, and the host's script was written by David Birch. The panellists were CJ Donnelly, Michael Contario, Tom Ellis, and Chris Smoten. They did not have a script.